thing from last year, but I'm so exhausted with the it, will he, won't he with Soto this year, and the fact that it feels like free agency has mostly been held up as a result of it. And
Right.
I just don't.
And it's a deluge of information that's, or like a deluge of data that's not necessarily information, maybe. I'm maybe
And
struggling with the
I'm
best way
not
to describe this,
even,
but it's just like
yeah.
it's not, it's very, honestly, maybe it's the TikTokification of the world, right? Like where it's just
Yeah.
like I was thinking about this with my kids watching YouTube shorts,
Yeah.
and it's like a lot of junk. And it's like happening fast, and it's like how much of this is actually being processed, and how much of this is just like sucking you in. And
Yeah.
like yeah, this is definitely an old man yelling at the clouds thing. But like I thought about this with the like deluge of Spotify raps this week, right? And it's like you listened, and like quantifying like you listened to this many minutes and this many times of this song and stuff that I saw people sharing, and it's like the quant. And maybe this is a weird thing for you and I to say as people who, you know, talk about war and, you know, XFIP, but some of the quantification of things that I don't know if it necessarily needs to be quantified, it should be enjoyed in a different way from quantification.
So, I mean, I do kind of have a take on this, especially the Spotify thing. Remember, I used to do like patchwork quilts every year of like the 100 albums the 100 albums I listened to the most that year. And I had to painstakingly go through that process, but I used a program called a Scrobler for Last.fm to track my music listening. But it wasn't just because I wanted to like be like, yo, this is like to show off, like, hey, this is what I was listening to this year. It was more of just like a, for me, I wanted to record like where my taste took me that year. And the Last.fm part of it was to show me like what other cool things I could listen to that were similar, right? Like I wanted to use it as an exploration device. And it definitely feels like what's going on is less that and more just like. And there are, I assume there are some people that are experiencing in the same way that I experienced my last
Right, like
Defender
there's
journey.
people who are big on discovery, and you
But I
know,
do feel
there are
like a
people who
lot
are
of it
just
is like a,
consumption.
yeah, I do feel like it's a lot of it is just clout chasing also, right? Like, look at what I listened to this year.
I'm in the top 0.1% of people who listen to this artist or something.
Yeah, like it just like, it was never, music listening is never about that for either of us, man. Like it was. I want to listen to a song to hear somebody's human experience. It's about connection.
Well, speaking of music, what's on the pity party tomorrow?
As I continue down my international path, I'm exploring emo music in the English Isles, specifically Ireland. So come join me.
Wonderful. That's tomorrow night, Saturday, as I like to call it.
Yeah, buddy.
That's it for the Bench Jockey. Stick around for Still Talking here on 101.5 UMFM.
Strike three, you're out.
Welcome back, everybody. Merry Christmas, because it's Christmas season now. That's Litmus by Drum. I remember when that song came out, it was kind of random, because I didn't expect Drum to put out a Christmas song, nor one that good. But, hey, I love that song. It comes on every December for me. Thank you, Aiden, for showing that one to me. We got a lot to talk about. I think we had a really good week of sports here in the past week. But if you ever have any questions of your own that you want a random 21-year-old to answer, please be sure to call in 204-269-8636. I'll be checking the phone lines. If I see something pop up, I'll take it. Let's get right into it. The Bengals did it again. They absolutely crushed me. So on Sunday, they played the Steelers, played host to the Steelers, division rival, the team that I despise the most. And it was the same game that I've seen from this team pretty much every single week. It was the same Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, do absolutely everything you possibly can, and everyone else kind of sit back, do nothing. It was unbearable. Unbearable. Other games like this have crushed me. This one, I felt validated and angry. Final score was 44-38. Steelers moved to 9-3. They're totally legit, by the way. If anyone thinks that this is the same Steelers we've seen in recent years where they just kind of coast off of high-end talent and beat inferior opponents, no. This is a good team. Steelers 9-3. Bengals, they fall to 4-8. Playoffs, I mean, they were pretty much not going to make the playoffs weeks ago. I know that. But now it's like one more loss away from mathematical elimination. This is a totally different step that we just took. So like I said, 44-38. This is the first time since 2018 that a Steelers team has scored 40 or more points. First time in 6 years. That's how bad your defense is. They let up 520 total yards of offense. Russell Wilson had 414 yards and 3 touchdowns. Yeah, he threw one interception that ended up being a pick six, but really it should have been a penalty. And you waste another good Burrow performance, as you always do. Yet another 300-yard, 3-touchdown game that he has lost. He's lost, I think, 4 or 5 of them now this year. He had 309-yard, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. That INT also wasn't on him. I really don't know how to feel other than just angry and pissed off. Because, look, the Bengals' offense is so good. It's so good. It's such a weird dynamic watching them on offense and getting excited and then seeing what happens after and being like, oh, crap. That good feeling I just had, it's about to go away. Because the Bengals' offense is 5th in the NFL in points per game at 27. They're 1st in pass yards per game. They've scored 27-plus in each of the last 4 games. In fact, they've scored 30 or more 6 times this year. They have the league leader in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns. He's a near triple crown. And the league leader in pass yards and pass touchdowns. Bengals defense, 27th in yards allowed per game. 370 yards per game is what you get on this. Almost 400. I mean, 350 is a good number. You're getting almost 400 on this team. They're 31st in points allowed per game. They're allowing 28.3. Like that's why they're losing all these games. Obviously, everyone knows it's the defense. But it's like, no matter what the offense does, the defense will allow more points. I know that, okay, saying that out loud sounds like the most surface-level analysis, but you get what I mean. They had the 3rd most missed tackles in the NFL. And then after the game on Sunday, in the locker room, a reporter asked Jermaine Pratt, hey, it seemed like you guys had a lot of missed tackles today. What were they doing? And then he acts surprised and almost a little bit offended. Like, well, we didn't miss tackles. They're just getting the ball out quick. They had 14 missed tackles in that game. Watch the highlights. Every time Pittsburgh does anything on offense, it's, I mean, not because I'm not trying to take away from Pittsburgh's win here. They absolutely earned it. This is great for them. But, like, every time they did something, Bengals defense was just nowhere to be seen. And so the Bengals are 4-8, even though they have all that on offense. It's because of how bad their defense is. Here's some crazy stats. They're 2-4 this season when scoring 33 or more points. The rest of the NFL, all 31 other teams, 51-1. 2-4 to 51. It's lunacy. That's what it is on defense. Burrow does everything he possibly can in spite of Zach Taylor. Then pulls a miracle out of a hat, pulls a rabbit out of a hat, whatever analogy you want to use. And then just complete and utter lunacy from coaching to personnel to the owner. Here's another stat. The Bengals are averaging 27.8 points in losses this season. That's an NFL record. No other team has averaged that many points in their losses. It's inexplicable. It's inexplicable. And look, it's so much more frustrating, especially as a Bengals fan, because it's so clear what the issues are. Mike Brown, his cheapness has just leached its way into what should have been another good Bengals team. I mean, think about how many different Bengals eras have been ruined by organizational incompetence. Carson Palmer and Chad Ochocinco, you don't think they could have made an AFC Championship or even a Super Bowl? Those two definitely could have. AJ Green and Andy Dalton, they made the playoffs 5 straight years, yeah. But they probably could have gotten further if, you know, certain guys hadn't been let walk. Reggie Nelson, Andrew Whitworth. And then now this Bengals era. Even though we made a Super Bowl, this team should win one. And you know what's really frustrating as an analyst? They're so bad that I can't even take credit for the things I was right about. Not that I'm doing this to prove to everybody how much smarter I am. I'm not doing it for that. But I think as sports fans, we all understand the feeling of wanting to be right about things, right? You get into a lunch table argument with your friends. You want to be right about things. But the Bengals are just making it so hard for me to say, hey, you know what? I was right about that. Because I was right about the Commanders and the success they're having. Because I was right about the Panthers, who are turning a corner. I said that they'd be, by the end of the season, they'd be a team that not going to make the playoffs, but they're going to look good and promising. Well, that's what they're looking like right now. I was right about the Jets and how bad they were, and the Browns and how bad they were. I was right about all those things. But I can't take credit for it because I talked such a big game about this team. I was looking through rose-colored glasses. I was puffing the hopium, whatever analogy you want to use. I talked so much about them, and they're making me look so dumb. It's a bit like this season isn't just, oh, hey, they suck, whatever, tough year, we'll get them next year. This is like I'm putting my time and attention and my love into this team, and it's not reciprocated. It's actually so brutal. And then they do nothing. Zach Taylor should have been fired weeks ago. Lou Anarumo should have been fired after week one. Mike Brown should have hired an actual GM probably like 20 years ago instead of just making it himself / whatever Duke Tobin is. It's absolutely brutal. If you have any questions, again, please call in. 204-269-8636. I'll be repeating that number just to see. Speaking of a cat team, another cat team in the NFL, this one's actually doing well. It's the Detroit Lions. So last night on Thursday Night Football, they host the Packers, their division rival. See the parallels here? And it was a great game. I wasn't able to watch a lot of it. I was decorating my Christmas tree, but I was able to catch the end of it. And what a game it was. 34-31, Packers fall to 9-4, Lions 12-1. Two very, very good teams. I think the Packers, I'll get into them in a minute, but they're definitely an interesting story. I do want to talk about the Lions here because they won the game and I think they're the more interesting story. Also, again, Al Michaels, not good. That was a great game, and there was a couple times there where he was just totally lethargic. I think that this win was an important win for the Lions because I think that they played a really great team. I think they overcame some of their own struggles. And I think the thing that really makes this an important win for them is that they came from behind. And look, I know that they didn't have like a huge hole they were in. Plus, they were up by 10, right? They were up by 10 early. Then Packers go up by 4 and 4 and then 3, I think. Like, Packers had a bunch of small leads. But I think that that's all important for them because the Lions, especially over the past month and a half, have just been controlling games. They're one of the most dominating presences on a football field that I'd seen in years. Like, I was talking about this with Johnny last week about how that's what this team, like, they will force you to play their game. They will command your respect and won't allow you to do anything that you've brought to the table. Like anything you've prepped for, they won't let you do that. That's why they've been so good. And that's all. That's obviously awesome. You want your team to be like that. But historically in the NFL, what you see oftentimes is that one team every regular season that's just blowing out opponents and dominating games, when they get to the playoffs, then they lose. Ravens in 2019 went 14-2. They were blowing teams out by 20 or 30 or even 40 points every week. Then they lost to the Titans in their first game. It was the same thing with the Colts one year, I think, in the late 2000s. They were blowing teams out. Boom. Lost. Like, that's something you see. And that's not to say that every really good team ends up with that fate. But it's definitely a trend worth looking at and studying to avoid that, because no one wants to lose in the playoffs, especially when you have such a good regular season. So again, this win for the Lions, because they've been dominating all these games recently, now that they had to overcome some struggles, and yes, I'm aware of the fact that Goff threw 5 interceptions versus the Texans. That's another big win for them. But this one in particular, because it was against a truly great team in the Packers. Look, they're up by 10, blew that lead. That can happen in January. Then your opponent gets all the momentum. They go up. Obviously, that can always happen, but especially against a division rival. Like, this felt like a playoff game. And then even though in the playoffs, you'll claw your way back, but then that other team just, in an instant, boom, their lead's back. Right? These are all things you need to overcome in January. Even the greatest teams, even the Ravens, the 14-2 Ravens and those Colts teams when they had Manning and all those guys, they all need to learn this lesson at some point. And yes, I know that they made the NFC Championship last year, but a part of me, while I looked at how good the Lions were and they gave them all their flowers, a part of me was feeling a bit nervous. Like, okay, they might get too used to all of this winning in this domination. And then once they play a Philly or maybe a Rams, I don't know. But once they play one of those teams, you know, they might just get, like Tyson, you hit him in the chin, boom, out. You know, they might just get knocked quickly. They don't know what to do because they've never had to deal with that. But last night against the Packers, they learned how to deal with that. I think that's important for them going forward. Another big story from this Lions game was, I'm not going to talk about the refs. Personally, I don't think Goff's knee was down, but eh. Another big story from this game, and this is a big story from a lot of Dan Campbell games, and this is why I love Dan Campbell. You know, he always goes for it. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter what the situation, where they are on the field, what they need, how much time is left. Doesn't matter if they're playing a peewee team. He will go for it on fourth down if he needs to. And a question you see brought up a lot, I'm seeing it get brought up this morning, the morning after the game. Will Dan Campbell's aggressiveness to go for it hurt them? I think the obvious answer is no. And those who disagree with that are going to throw this back in my face. Well, look what he did in the NFC Championship. He should have taken those field goals and they would have made the Super Bowl. Yeah, sure. But that's not who the Lions are. Like, everyone praises the Lions for being the grit team. And they're always like, oh, look at how good Dan Campbell's been since he got here. He's given this team an identity. You know, his opening press conference when he got hired, he's like, we're going to play to the spirit of the city. We're going to be grit and tough. We're going to keep going. We're not going to give up. Every time you put us down, we're going to get back up. We're going to bite off a kneecap. You know, that's the toughness that we praise the Lions for. That's the toughness that we see every Sunday. Then when it exhibits itself in a fourth down situation, when going for it and being successful would be so much more rewarding than just settling, we say, no, be conservative. Look, I understand it. Yes, sometimes you really just need to take the points. And, you know, I could hear the argument in the NFC Championship that he should have just taken those points. Look, hindsight's 20/20. But for me, when I watch the Lions go for it on fourth down on their own 31 or on their own 21 when they already had a close field goal, like they both times last night, they were successful in one, failed on the other. When I see that, I'm happy. One, as a fan, it just makes for an exciting game. I mean, whenever a team goes for it on fourth down, it's like all tension goes up like 10 notches. It's the Alfred Hitchcock of football plays because it's just complete and utter tension and interest. but like also just again as a football fan, but also kind of like as an analyst, I'm happy for the Lions because obviously they're like the Bengals. They've been just denigrated and bad for a long time. Now they have this good team, and I'm glad that they now have this confidence to say, no, we're not going to punt. We're not going to kick a field goal. We're going to go for it, and we're going to run it down your face, and we're going to do so well. So for me, the Lions, if they were to settle, that'd be going against their own identity. And grit is their identity. They need to go for it. To not play their brand of football is to play their opponent's game. And what was I saying at the start of this segment was what makes the Lions so good, why have they been so good this past month and a half, was because they didn't let other teams play their own game. Yes, it's a risk. Yes, there's a solid chance that the Packers convert, or sorry, that the Packers stop the conversion, or whatever their opponent, and the result is something catastrophic. That's all very real. But they wouldn't be playing their own version of football if they didn't do that kind of thing. Dan Campbell wouldn't be as great of a head coach as he is if he didn't go for it. I think it's absolutely insane to me that people are trying to take away from this Lions team because they just want to go for it. They're winning, guys. They're 12-1. They're the best team in the league right now. They just knocked off a division rival, a good division rival, the Packers. Boy, the Packers interesting. They're such a dynamic team. Like, Jordan Love, I think he's a good quarterback. I'm going to push back on calling him franchise just yet because he didn't have some struggles this year. But if I see it in the playoffs, I'll call him a franchise quarterback. But Josh Jacobs has been so good. I have him in fantasy. He's been incredible. He had 3 touchdowns last night. By the way, hey, big ups for Tim Patrick. 2 touchdowns. First time he scored one in, like, I think over a year or something. But like, the Packers are so good. And people seem to forget. Like, yeah, I think that they're not, like, they're not on the same tier as the Lions or the Eagles. But I think people forget this is one of the youngest offenses in the NFL and one of the youngest defenses, although the defense is pretty bad. It does need work. But, like, I think for the next couple of years, man, the Packers are just not going to go away. No matter what we think happens, they're not going to go away. I do see a world where the Packers can upset, like, a team like Philly. I mean, obviously, you can't have the Jaden Reed performance from last night. I think it was Jaden Reed, right? But yeah, I think Packers could. I think the Packers do get to a divisional round, and they're not going to beat Detroit. They're not going to beat these other teams. But especially given like 2 years, guys, this is such a young team. They're already 9-4. Give them 2 years. This is going to be a team competing for a Super Bowl easily. I want to talk about some basketball now because I'm hearing some concerning rhetoric coming from Hollywood. Just by the way, another reminder, if you want to call in, 204-269-8636. I'm hearing some concerning discussion coming out of LA. Now, I feel I need to address this because a couple of weeks ago, I came on the air and I started talking up a big game about J.J. Redick. And I started saying, wow, hey, you know what, guys? The Lakers are winning games. And J.J. Redick's a good coach. And right now, it's not looking great because this time last year under Darvin Ham, they were 13-9. And right now under Redick, they are 12-10. And look, I understand why that's concerning. I really do. I do. I understand it. It's not crazy. But look, did they just get torched by the Heat? Yeah, Tyler Hero had 7 straight threes in the third quarter. He had 9 overall. He was amazing. But, like, why is it with L.A. fans and then sports media, which loves to cover L.A.? Hey, by the way, thank you, Bleacher Report, for doing your own version of Wrapped and just proving to the world what we already knew was true, which was that you just post the Lakers more than anyone else and the Warriors and the Celtics, but the Lakers especially. Thank you for that. But, like, Lakers are under so much pressure, and they just get talked about so much. They have so many fans that are from, like, Connecticut and have never even been to California. Funny how that works. They have millions of fans in L.A. They have all these fans around the world. And then because they're such a big market and they have LeBron, everybody wants to talk about them all the time. And everybody's so quick to conclusions. Watch a Lakers game. You can tell J.J. Redick is so much better at coaching than Darvin Ham is. I don't care that their record this time last year was better. And frankly, in my own defense, I think I need to say this. A couple of weeks ago when I covered this, they were 7-4, okay? It's not my fault that in those last few games they've gone 5-6. All right, that's just bad timing. So don't fault me for that, but I am aware that I know it looks bad on my part. But look, guys, J.J. Redick is so much better. He's clearly a good coach. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to, like, again, Lakers fans, they just jump to so many conclusions. It's like Jimmy Butler makes a basket on the first possession of the game and suddenly they want to tear down the Staples Center. Do you want to know the actual issues? And this is what's so, like, aggravating about it, is that it's so, all this scrutiny and criticism and just put this team under a microscope and no one can see the obvious issue. No wonder they've had three coaches in the last 4 years. It's the same roster. They've had the same roster for 4 years. And it just doesn't work. Yes, I know a few weeks ago I said the Lakers are winning games. And I kind of talked like they're going to be. I did pretty much say that they're going to be this contender. Look, I think they'll pick it back up. But I'm just talking about the here and now. I think the Lakers will be fine. They'll recover from this. I don't care that Darvin Ham had a better record. I'm talking about the here and now. J.J. Redick is a great coach. I can tell. I don't know. I don't have the stats for you. It's just a gut feeling. Okay? Watch the Lakers games. The roster does not work. Austin Reeves, he's a good player. Yeah, but he shouldn't be a three on what you claim to be a championship contending team. Dalton Knecht looks like a young, interesting prospect. He had that really great game. Since then, he's scored 11 points a game. He's not. Who's your number three? You don't actually have a true number three. D'Lo is inconsistent as all hell. Every time you get a cool role player, he just sucks. Gabe Vincent right now. And it's the same thing every year. You think it's the coach's fault? No, it's Rob Pelinka's fault. It's Jeannie Buss's fault. Same thing with the Bengals. It's front office. Just because the front office isn't the one going out and suiting up and standing in front of the TVs and all the cameras every day doesn't mean they're not the issue. That's why people often forget about it in this kind of thing. It's just the fact that the players and the coaches are the ones that are out there. You see them. You don't see the GM and all those other guys. Oh my God, I don't know how I forgot this. One thing about the Bengals situation, just going back really quickly, Bengals waived a really solid player named Trenton Irwin, one of our solid receivers, been here for a couple of years. This guy always made plays. He's a fan favorite. Waved him out of nowhere for some reason. And like a lot of players do when they've been on a team for a few years and then they leave, they make an Instagram post saying, oh, thank you guys, blah, 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 blah. Oh, I love my time here. And I commented on his post and I said, this is a stupid decision. It's a backwards decision from a backwards organization. And he liked it. So just to show you how bad the front office is in Cincinnati, an actual former Bengal, like actual NFL player, openly admitted that their front office is completely backwards. Sorry, I almost forgot to put that in there. I just thought that was insane. Going back to the Lakers, though. It's the same roster. It's Rob Pelinka. It's Jeannie Buss. Okay? If you have any issues with it, with this team, it's at them, not J.J. Redick. I'm going to defend that man till the day I die, it seems. Because if Lakers fans keep talking like this and thinking like this and jumping to these kinds of conclusions, and if ESPN keeps feeding that fire and just pouring gasoline on it of just the fire the coach, every year. No, it's not the coach. Get off J.J. Redick's ass. Just to end things off here, another basketball team, one that I'm really impressed by. It's the Orlando Magic. They got some magic going on there. I know, that's why they're called that. Real great realization there, Kieran. But hey, look, the Magic are playing some incredible basketball. They're third in the East right now. They're at 18-4. And in their last eight, they're 7-1. Franz Wagner, how good has he been, hey? Franz Wagner has been just a revelation for this team. He just won Player of the Week a couple of weeks ago. And this season, he's averaging 24.2 points per game, 5.7 assists, 5.6 rebounds. He's shooting 47% from the field, which is incredible. Like I said, Player of the Week. And again, they're 18-4, right? And you know what? You know what's crazy about this? They haven't had their best player since October 30th. Paolo Banchero, who was averaging 29 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists on 49% shooting, hasn't been here since October 30th. Well over a month, and they're 18-4. I thought they'd fall off when he got hurt. If it wasn't for Kenny Atkinson and the Cavs, I'd say Jamal Mosley down in Orlando should absolutely be in the Coach of the Year discussion. And I think things are really turning around there in Orlando. Last Christmas by Wham. The mics are coming off, but hey, you know me, I'm still talking. Have a good weekend, everybody.
UMFM 101.5 broadcasts at 1200 watts from the University of Manitoba, located on Treaty 1 territory, the original lands of the Anishinaabeg, Nahiwak, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and the homeland of the Métis Nation.
The views expressed in the following program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of this station.
Is Democracy Now!
We have documented Israel's perpetration of 3 out of the 5 prohibited acts under the Genocide Convention since the 7th of October. These include killing members of the group, causing them serious mental or bodily harm, and inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about their physical destruction.
Amnesty International has become the first major human rights organization to conclude Israel's committing genocide in Gaza. We'll speak to Amnesty's Israel-Palestine researcher. Then, All That Remains, a new Al Jazeera documentary, tells the story of Leon, a 13-year-old girl from Gaza who lost her leg in an Israeli strike.